When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following is a presentation of the Premier Dance Network.
I'm James, and this is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Oh, that's terrible.
Welcome to The Stage Right Side. I am James Whiteside, your host, and I am here with American Ballet Theatre Executive Director Kara Medoff-Barnett. Say hey.
Hi.
I am so, so excited to talk to you, Kara. There are so many things that I just don't understand, and I need help.
I can't guarantee that I understand them yet. Either.
Well, maybe you will after this chat, lol. It is week, what is this, six at the Met. This is episode six of The Stage Right Side. And we are in the middle of Onegin week. And we had the pleasure of having Alessandra Ferri back and Roberto Bolle. And it was like an Italian takeover. And then tonight we have Diana Vishneva's farewell performance. And she'll be dancing with Marcelo Gomez. You may have heard of him. And it's going to bring down the house. I know it. Yeah.
I can't wait.
If you're not here already, then you're going to be sad you missed it. Let's dive right in. Can you give me all the boring stuff? Let's get it out of the way. Where you're from and tell me, like, where you went to school and all that jazz.
Sure. So I don't think it's particularly boring because I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina, which is one of the most, you know, exciting places in the United States.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up in Greensboro, and I am the eldest of six siblings.
Wow.
So we had quite the brood.
Are you a Mormon family?
No, we're a Jewish family.
Jewish family, getting down.
Jewish North Carolina.
Are you all, like, they're all the products of your mother and your father?
All the products of my mother and my father, and my mother was told she could never have children. So I was the big surprise. But apparently, I showed her that having kids was a pretty cool thing to do.
Wow.
So she did it five more times.
Five more times, yeah. She was like, and, this is cool.
So I grew up in North Carolina. I stayed in North Carolina for college because I wanted to be close to sibling number six, who was 3 years old when I left. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Duke. And then I moved to New York.
Just Duke. No big
just
deal.
Duke. Just
so
Duke.
I just went
I'm
to Duke.
Lifelong Duke basketball fan.
That's fun.
Started going to those games when I was a toddler.
I quite like basketball, actually. Yeah,
we'll have to watch some basketball.
Yeah, let's do it. That sounds fun. It moves quickly, and there's a lot of, like, flashiness. It's, like, fancy. I don't know.
It does move quickly.
And there's a lot of, like, pretty jumps and things.
Very cute.
Wish they wore the cool 70s outfits still. Those, like, little shorts and the high socks. It's very chic.
I wanted to do a March Madness bracket for EBT, but I didn't get around to it. So next year. That's on the list.
All right. If you need help, I'll have to Google how to do that because I have no idea. I mean, I'm always mad in March, but whatever. All right. So what did you go to school for then?
What did I say? I ended up studying English literature, but I went to be a doctor. So I decided to be pre-med.
Uh-huh.
My father was a doctor, and I went and got my EMT certification. So while I was in college, I was riding the ambulance, and I was on this Duke rescue squad. So I had all of the emergency equipment, and I would be on call, and most of it was just taking care of drunk classmates and making sure they made it to the emergency room. But we also, Duke was a trauma center, and so we also got to put our fingers in bullet wounds and be part of the action. So I thought that I wanted to be a doctor, and then...
Is that how you, like, staunch the bleeding? You just have to plug it up like that?
Plug it up.
Wow.
Apply pressure.
It's a shame you can't just, like, get a bullet-sized, like, I don't know, plug. Like a cork.
I'm sure that kind of thing exists. One of my brothers is an emergency room doctor in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
This is a brother who, by the way, went to an ABT summer intensive in Alabama.
Okay, wait. You didn't dance, right?
I did dance. Not like you dance or like anyone in this company dances, but I did train
in ballet
as a kid. I did.
For how long?
I did. Through high school.
Oh, wow. So you did it.
I have good turnout.
Work. At least somebody does in this room. I'm like Biscuits McGee over here.
No, my ballet mistress, who I'm still very close to, is 96, and she's coming to see Whipped Cream next week.
No way.
She's flying up from North Carolina to see Whipped Cream.
She's going
to
be so confused by Whipped Cream.
I think she's going to love it. Are you kidding?
Yeah. So, okay, we're on to Whipped Cream. I have a question. Do you feel like Whipped Cream is your biggest triumph as executive director here?
Well, I think it's the company's biggest triumph this year, and so I feel very proud to be a part of it, and
I feel
very proud that we greenlit this amazing, incredible piece of art and said, let's go for it. Let's swing for the fences. We, at the time, weren't even sure how we were going to pull it off in such a short period of time, how we were going to pay for it, but we said this is too exciting not to do.
And so it really had a quick turnaround. Like, what would you say the timeline was? I remember the costumes were still being made, like, the day of the show.
That sounds about right. It sounds about right. It was so many people working together in alignment to get that done. And the hats off to everyone, the artistic staff, the production staff, the fundraising staff, the marketing team. I mean, everything had to be in lockstep, and it was. And to all of you who learned a lot of incredibly hard choreography from what
I
understand.
Oh, my God. I remember when, like, the first time I ran that, it's called the Pot of Cot, but I think it's called the Pot. I don't even know what it's called, but I'm Prince Coffee in the ballet. Mm-hmm. And the first time we ran that whole section, I thought I was going to die. Like, literally, my lungs were on fire. I was coughing for, like, 2 hours afterward because my lungs just couldn't deal. But eventually you just get used to it.
It's intense.
It is. It's a lot of running around, like just zipping about like Flojo.
Right. And you're wearing these very happy, bright costumes and your faces don't show it, but we're in awe. Every single one of us out there, we're in awe.
So what would you say your biggest triumph as executive director is?
Oh, it's too soon to say.
Okay, well, what's the thing you want to be your biggest triumph?
Oh, goodness. I think it's helping everyone on the team figure out who we can be for the next generation of artists and audiences, right? What American Ballet Theatre has been around for 78 years. Hopefully it's going to be around for 1,078 years to come.
So many years.
But who are we for the next... The next generation, right? Let's call it the next 25 years, the next 50 years. Who do we want to be? Who can we be? And so that's something that I'm still grappling with, but loving every minute of that exploration. So it's finding every pocket of opportunity and unpacking it.
Yeah. So what led you to ABT then? It sounds like you have big plans for ABT, but... you know, for someone who left ballet in high school, what brought you back to it?
Well, I had come to see ABT several times as a kid. I was very lucky. Even though I grew up in the South, my parents were from the New York area. And so every year we would do a pilgrimage and we would come to New York and we would always try to align it with ballet season. So I definitely had some ABT posters on my wall growing up. And so this does feel meant to be in a way. Uh-huh. But what drew me to ABT was this, it was literally a phone call out of the blue from a search firm saying, would you ever consider? Uh-huh. And it was instantaneous. Of course, consider. Yeah. It's a dream role. It's the dream job I didn't know was my dream job.
Yeah.
But I came to it via several years in theater, in commercial theater, on and off Broadway, producing.
Yeah, what have you produced then? Something won a Tony, I read. Like, what was it?
The play that won a Tony was Long Day's Journey Into Night.
Okay, that's amazing.
A very dark Eugene O'Neill play, but with an incredible cast. Yeah. It was a total joy to be a part of this play that is so dark and about a very dysfunctional family. So I had the opportunity to work with some incredible artists in the theater world, and I still love the theater. I see a lot of theater, and I think that's one of the things that I love about ABT is the storytelling and the theater aspect of it, that I get to experience the most incredible dancers on the planet who are also the most incredible actors on the planet, and I get to sit out there and weep and laugh and all those things that you all...
I mean, that's really one of the main reasons I wanted to come to ABT. I was in Boston before for 10 years, and it had become a little comfortable, and I wanted to, you know, raise the bar, literally, you know, see all these amazing dancers that are here and just steal their moves, basically. So I deeply relate to your feelings in that way.
I'm glad you decided to.
I'm so glad to. So you
I spent a few years in Boston, though. I love Boston.
As a city?
Yeah. I went to grad school in Boston.
Where?
At Harvard Business School.
Oh, her. Just Duke and Harvard, LOL. Yeah, I went to high school.
In Boston?
No, I'm just saying, I went to high school.
You went to high school in Connecticut, right?
Yeah. It's so funny. I love talking to, like, the non-dancers on this podcast, because we're in the same building all the time, but our lives could not be more different. I am doing, like, in my pajamas all day, doing, like, spins in a dark room on the sub-basement of the theater.
And I'm wearing heels and a business suit.
Yeah, and you have to, like, go to the financial district for a quick meeting at Goldman Sachs. Like,
that's so true.
It's just so different, but we have such a common thread in this sort of arts organization and just New York City art world, etc. We just did a fist bump. I think that's what the kids are calling it these days. High fives are so 2000 late.
True.
Do you consider yourself a feminist?
I think I do. Yes.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know what Kara looks like, she is a tall, beautiful woman. And I want to know as...
Who's blushing right now?
Who's blushing, yes. She's purple right now. So as essentially a businesswoman, what do you feel like, you know, how does that make you feel in situations where it's you and a bunch of men in a boardroom? Do you feel uncomfortable at times, or do you just feel like, I'm a boss-ass bitch, I'm getting this, you know?
Somewhere in between the two, I think. It's interesting because I've gravitated towards fields up until now where I was often the only woman in the room. Uh-huh. So in theater producing, it's mostly a boys' club.
Yeah.
Business school, certainly, there were... Yeah. When I was there, it was 30% women. I think it's evening out now, but it was definitely more men. And until recently, the type of role I have now was certainly more men. I think it's a fascinating moment that we're in, that many of the leading arts institutions and performing arts institutions are led by women. Mm-hmm. So Lincoln Center, Kennedy Center, New York Phil,
LA.
New York City Ballet, ABT, right? There's all these incredible women who I'm having the opportunity to get to know and learn from. So I think that I feel fortunate and blessed by all the people who came before who made it possible that I could have this role at America's National Ballet Company. But I don't think I think about the gender of the people in the room as much as I think about the motivations of the people in the room, right? What is everyone in that room trying to achieve and accomplish, and what do we have in common rather than I'm the only one in heels?
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, as a ballet dancer, it's so... The whole art form is essentially run by women. You know, it's really the ballerina, and the men are the supporting actors, really. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people may disagree with that because it's really wonderful to see a lovely male variation. But when it comes down to it, the story is very often driven by the ballerina. So I have been so lucky to see so many powerful women and just have that be the norm. So I'm not a businessman, but I really, I mean, I find myself to be a very strong feminist, and I love seeing women in charge. You know,
thanks, James.
Yeah. So that's really great. Blah blah blah. And I wanted to ask a little bit about like ABT's future. What right now is your biggest obstacle for ABT?
That's a good question, because I tend to focus more on the opportunities than the obstacles. That's just my general orientation, uh-huh. and I wake up every day thinking about what's possible, not what's in my way.
Uh-huh.
But if I focus on the obstacles, I think that ABT has such surreal artistic product, right? So as a business person, it's what product are you mm-hmm. selling, elevating, sharing, bringing to the broadest possible base, right? And our product is the perfection. I mean, you all might not feel that way every day, but we who have the opportunity, the privilege to support your work, it's perfection, right? So then my obstacle as a business person is, well, how do I support that in the best, most effective, most efficient way? And ABT's infrastructure isn't perfect. ABT's infrastructure needs strengthening. And mm-hmm. so I think that because this company has always put every dollar onto the stage and focused all of our energy and attention on that, mm-hmm. that I have to spend some of my energy and attention on making sure that the infrastructure is strong enough to sustain that level of excellence mm-hmm. for the future. So that's things like our digital infrastructure, which kudos to you for doing this podcast and for getting us out there. But we have a long way to go. We had a long way to go. We're on our way, but mm-hmm. we need more digital content. We need a better website. We need a better app. We need mm-hmm. right. We need to enter the new age if we want to talk to the audiences because, of tomorrow. Yeah. We need to be where they are. So the digital infrastructure is one piece of that, right? Our physical infrastructure. We affectionately love our home at 890. Mm-hmm. It's so historic and has so many wonderful memories, but we haven't paid it a lot of attention, mm-hmm. whether it's a new coat of paint or a new carpet here and there, which is why I think that the love and care that we got to give the lounge mm-hmm. With the help of some generous friends.
So for those of you who don't know, our studios are at 890 Broadway down in Union Square. And when I tell you that there have been more stars going through there than the Milky Way galaxy, it would be an understatement. But it's fairly, it's old New York. It's really old New York, and it's
vintage.
Charming.
It's vintage.
But it gets to a point where you're like, all right, come on. So Kara met with Amy Astley, who is the editor-in-chief of Architectural Digest. And, they had a little chat, and Amy was like, well, what can we do? What can we do? You know, what's the thing? And Kara suggested, you know, all the dancers really would love a lounge. And so they put together this incredible project where all of the furniture, all of the upholstery, all of the artwork, everything was donated and featured in Architectural Digest, and the product is incredible. And the dancers are so happy, and that's just the beginning. And, like you're saying, it's just like baby steps to get to a place where we're all just nailing it.
Yeah, so I think that those it's not the sexy stuff,
yeah.
right? Had a coat of paint or a new website or on the staff side, we have some of the most talented people on the planet who are working on the administrative staff to fundraise, to market, to mm-hmm. do the finance and the payroll and the benefits and everything that they do to keep this company operating. And so it's also, how do we continue to train them and challenge them and retain them? And so I think the talent infrastructure is another area where mm-hmm. I think we need to invest some time and attention and ultimately resources so that we can really, again, be there be there to hold up this company and to help the company advance.
Well, there really is a disconnect between administration and artist. And, I mean, at least since you've come on, I find I'm coming into contact more with, you know, fundraising and marketing and all of that jazz. But it's really difficult because we're never in the same place at the same time, unless we're doing a podcast in my dressing room. Sometimes at receptions from performances, we'll all, you know, the whole, you know, organization will be in a room together, but it's also, I'm just like sitting in a chair talking to Bella, you know?
Right.
So it's sort of hard to get the whole arts business world into one happy place.
Well, bring on the suggestions, because one thing you said, what am I proudest of, or something along those lines, and I can tell you the moments that have been most magical and rewarding for me have been the moments where I do feel like we're coming together as an entire organization. Staff, dancers, board, your board of directors is, they're so generous and
passionate,
they're so motivated and they're so passionate and they're integral to this process. They're the engine. And so how do we bring that whole family, the donors, the audience, the dancers, the crew, the orchestra, right? All of these human beings that are working together to elevate American Ballet Theater. The moments that have been most magical are where I feel like we're crossing over those lines and bringing those human beings into the same space to either to celebrate something or to work towards something together.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I have a really hard time with group dinners. Like, I really don't like to do dinner with more than five people. Unless it's like, I mean, if it's like the gala reception, I'll make an exception.
I was just going to say, never be the executive director of a ballet company if you don't want to have dinner with more than five people.
I really just, my patience is so tried. And, you know, I wonder, is it okay that everyone, it's so many people in this organization, obviously not as many as like, you know, a bank, but, do we all need to be family? Do we all need to understand exactly what everyone's doing to work well together? Or I don't think
that my opinion is that we don't all have to understand what everyone's doing. We have to respect all the different inputs and perhaps just be curious about, and I think clearly you're curious, that's why you're doing this interview and this series of interviews, is how does this whole organism work? And so I don't expect that everyone on the administrative staff understands the complexity of the choreography that you're learning, but they admire it and they respect it and they know how hard it is and how hard you work to achieve your level of excellence. And I feel like the more we can understand what it is that makes an electrician on our crew a great electrician or a great wig and makeup person or an incredible violinist or an incredible development professional raising money from institutions and foundations or from individuals, right? All of those are skill sets that are developed over time that are crucial to the thriving of this art form.
Yeah. As far as the dancers go, would you say that there's something that you would like to see more of, like more curiosity or more initiative, or what do you think? Or do you think we're nailing it?
Clearly nailing it.
You can just say it. I won't be sad.
I think that you're so focused by necessity on the work at hand that we don't get to interact with all of you enough. And I think that it's so magical and motivational and energizing. Did I already use that word? Energizing? For those of us on the business side of the house, when we have the opportunity to, when we get a thank you or a, hey, pop in and check this out, or that new website is awesome, or that article that you placed is great, or I think that just swinging through the the cubicles to say hello is great. And I think also when you're not in rehearsal mode to stop by.
Yeah.
I think that everyone we love to know what you're doing during your weeks off and just being aware of your world beyond the studios, beyond the Met, is helpful to us. And so when you stop by or communicate or reach out, we love it. But I think that together we should brainstorm more ways for there to be this type of dialogue and conversation.
Yeah.
But we love the ideas. I think we love questions. So if there are things that we're doing that you want to understand, bring it on. But also, and you've been great about this, James, but any ideas
she knows
the dancers
my name.
Have. But I personally love it, and I think that my colleagues do as well. Okay. When dancers come to us, you're the front lines, right? You're our ambassadors out there in the world. So people are feeding ideas to you. You have the opportunity to forge new relationships for this company. Every new relationship can turn into who knows what, right?
Yeah.
A new touring opportunity, a new sponsorship opportunity, a new fill in the blank, right? A new lounge. So I think that any time that dancers have ideas or introductions, my answer is always bring it on and let us explore it. We can't promise that it will turn into something, but we can promise that we'll check it out.
Yeah.
And so I would just
it's
welcome
like,
you
know,
and
when
you
see
you
a bag on the subway, like see something, say something. Everything relates to the subway because I'm a New Yorker. LOL.
I've been on the subway way too much today.
I'm about to get on the subway again. Isn't that exciting?
Which line?
I'm going to get on the N, or no, the 1 and transfer to the NR, or now it's like the NW or something. They changed the letters. How dare they? I hate change.
Stick with colors.
Right?
You're going on
yellow.
The yellow line.
Local yellow. I have to go to my apartment, and then I'm going, speaking of, like, things and stuff, I have to go downtown. I have a meeting with the Joyce Theater and doing some fundraising for something that you should all stay tuned about. I will keep you apprised in the future. But
it's my old hood. I used to live in Chelsea.
Yeah? I don't think I could do Chelsea. I mean, it's a lot. I live in Murray Hill, and it's like me and sort of 30-something bankers, and it's nice and quiet.
But you can walk to the studios, so that's
yes, good. It's amazing. I love walking. Public transportation makes me a bad person. Like, it makes me makes my soul dirty. Does that make sense?
Walking to work will make life in New York a pleasure.
Civilized.
I should walk to work more than I do. I'm usually running late.
All right.
But I have 3 kids, so that's my excuse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, also, mother of 3, which is insane also. I mean, I can't imagine. I have a cat, and I'm like, I don't have time for this. She barely does anything. So, kudos.
Mornings are exciting. They're all up. They're all usually
like 5?
6.
6.
6. It's same. 6. Yeah. It's usually the sun is up.
So, do you take a nap during the day ever?
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But no.
No. Okay. That's crazy.
No, but I drink a lot of coffee.
Mm.
Far too much coffee.
That's not a bad thing.
You can stop by. I have an espresso machine in the office.
That sounds ideal. I will. If I don't have time to run out for a coffee, I'm going to knock on your door.
Anytime you want.
Before we wrap this up, I just want to play a little game called... Oh, Corey's here.
Hi, Corey.
Hey, Coco. Say hi.
Hey.
Do you want to play Hedge or Not Hedge with us?
I don't want to interrupt this.
No.
This is a very special interview.
We're just wrapping up. All right, so... we're going to play Hedge or Not Hedge. Do you know what Hedge means?
I do.
Yes. Ah, yes. And if you all don't know what Hedge means by now, then you're Hedge. All right. Hedge or Not Hedge? Whiskey.
Hedge for me,
uh-huh.
But Bliss for my husband.
Why do you not like whiskey?
Because I like vodka.
Boom. Goes the dynamite. I really dislike vodka. Coco, what do you weigh in?
Hedge on alcohol.
Yeah, Coco doesn't drink. He tastes things because he's not, like, sober, per se, but he just doesn't really care for it. So, mad respect, yo. He's have you ever had a hangover?
No.
Oh, my God, can you imagine life without ever having a hangover? That's not Hedge, actually. all right, Hedge or not Hedge. High fashion.
Not Hedge.
Why?
High fashion is something to aspire to. I can't say I live in that world, but maybe one day.
Coco?
Yeah, not Hitch.
Yeah, I'm going to say not Hitch, too. Yeah, agreed. Hitch or not Hitch, gosh, I want to do, like, a really good one. Any ideas? I was going to say the golden cockerel, but that's, I can't do that, because we all have so many opinions. Sansha ballet shoes. Did you ever wear Sanchas?
I did not wear Sanchas, no. So I have no comment.
What about you?
I used to when I was a kid. Yeah,
I used
younger.
To also.
I'm
going to call Hedge.
Really?
I'm going to call Hedge, yeah. I mean, sorry, Sansha. I like your dance belts. I think I may have even talked about this before. All right, last one. Hedge or not Hedge, The Handmaid's Tale. Have you seen that yet?
No, but
oh my gosh.
I read the story.
It's
That's the Margaret
yeah.
Atwood
yeah.
book, right?
Did you read the book?
I read the book a long time ago.
Did you like it?
I was an English major, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it was very dark and very scary.
Yeah. Well, they've made it into a TV show, and I just finished it recently, and I've been telling everyone to watch it. It's fabulous.
I don't watch any TV shows. I'm here every night.
Okay. Well, clearly, I have so much more time. I'm going to go home tonight and watch TV. All right.
Well, I'm going to stay here and watch Onegin.
Different. Coco, any ideas there? What are you going to do tonight?
Stretch.
Coco's going to stretch until bedtime, and he's still going to be tight. Bless. All right. Thank you so much, Kara. I really can't thank you enough for
thank
doing this.
James.
It was such a pleasure
thanks
having you
having
on
me.
The Stage Right Side.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for welcoming me so warmly to ABT.
Of course. We're beyond thrilled to have you in our enormous family.
Yeah.
And beyond grateful to be here.
All right. Bye, guys. See you next week.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.